More variety.
You're listening to Para X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Coming to you live from planet Earth's real Gotham City, my name is Ra, and I'm here to awaken the dormant particles spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. It's Spiral Radio, baby, where each and every week we unveil the different shades of you and the different shades of me until we all vibrate the same frequency. It's another great, beautiful evening tonight. We got the Capricorn crescent waxing moon. We got another great thought-provoking night with another great guest. His name is John Herlowski, and I want to welcome everybody. You can find my guest at asorcerersapprentice.com, and you can find me, Ra, and my show, The Mystical Spiral, TMS, at themysticalspiral.com. And I want to welcome everybody in the chat room. Everyone listening live on parax.radio.com. And John, he's many things, everybody. He's worked for two large metropolitan police departments. He's a police officer, an academy instructor. He's been trained in SWAT tactics. He's a designated marksman. He's considered an expert in the field of human performance technologies. And he has spent half his life in the martial arts. I have many things in common with him. He's also a co-director and the co-founder of the nonprofit think tank, the Institute for Evolutionary Technologies, as well as the co-director of Project Trojan War II. He's a mind-body integration training program. He lives in California, and I want to welcome John, who was also trained by, I think, David Morehouse in remote viewing. So it's a really honor to have John here, and I want to welcome you, John, to Spiral Radio. How's it going?
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
It's an honor. I was gonna, if no one's heard about you before, and if you're just joining us, everybody, it's once again, his website is asorcerersapprentice.com, and he's also an author by the book of the same name. If you want to just give everybody a little brief intro of yourself, maybe, John, and let them know how you came into remote viewing from basically, you were raised to be a skeptic, basically. You come from science, mathematics, law enforcement. You need that ironclad proof to believe, So, I mean, it's good to be a healthy skeptic as well. It's amazing how someone like you, from your background, you ended up in, exploring your consciousness like this.
Well, it is kind of interesting because as I said when I first entered Dave Morehouse's class, I'm basically a skeptic. I've never had, prior to his classes, any type of psychic experience. I've never seen a ghost. I've never seen a UFO. So, you know, my background, when I was in college at Marquette University, my major was mathematics with a minor in biophysical engineering. So my belief systems are pretty well established in the physical sciences.
Is this like esoteric mathematics?
The area of mathematics that I like the best are in some number theory. I also like analysis.
Well, it is the universal language. I mean,
yes, it is. It is.
For sure.
So, back during the early 90s, I was involved in a mind-body integration program codenamed Project Trojan Warrior 2, which was an outgrowth of an Army Special Forces program that was done during the mid-80s. And it was designed to increase the effectiveness of the individual soldier, in this case, Special Forces soldiers. The idea Wow. being that quantitative superiority by the Soviet bloc could be countered by the increased effectiveness of the individual soldiers. So I had read about the program and had contacted, after it had been declassified, the people who were involved in the program, and we decided to try doing it for law enforcement. And during the time that we were investigating various types of human performance technologies, I came upon this information that they were experimenting with psychic ability in the military. And I never gave it much credence until years later, when in 1997, I happened to come across a book called Psychic Warrior, which was written by David Morehouse, who was a former member of Project Stargate, which was the overall term used by most people for the military psychic warfare program. And frankly, I was floored that not only did, you know, that the United States military and the government intelligence services would be using something like psychic ability.
Yeah.
But the thing that really kind of knocked me for a loop was the fact that they taught these people how to do it, using a technique scientifically validated called remote viewing. And that just blew me away. I thought, how can you teach somebody to be psychic?
Yeah, usually you would think that it's someone that has to be born that way. It's usually someone with a special, unique, person. And I'm right with you. That's it is flooring.
It was incredible to me that they took somebody like David Morehouse, who was a special operations infantry officer, Ranger company commander, who had never had, like myself, any previous experience in the paranormal, and they trained him to be a remote viewer. And the experiences and taskings that he was given when he was a member of the program were just amazing to me. I mean, it just didn't seem like something like this could really be true, and yet here it was, truth. And so I was fascinated by this, and I decided that I would learn more about it. And so I started researching it, and I started finding out more and more information about Project Stargate, and it was just a mind-bending experience. And so
Project Stargate started from the Stanford Research Institute, SRI, or?
Right. Basically, what it came down to was in the 70s,
there was information flowing around that the Soviet Union was heavily involved in psychic warfare. And so,
okay. Yeah.
The members of the intelligence services decided to find out whether or not it would pose any type of a real threat. I mean, they were pretty skeptical about it, but the Soviets seemed to be spending an awful lot of money and time and energy on it. And yes. So they felt...
We were always battling with them.
Thought it was something that needed to be investigated. So they started this low-level project through the Stanford Research Institute. And originally...
That was Ingo Swann? Is that... Like, Ingo Swann was from that as well? Because I know of his work.
Yeah, he was brought onto the program. The program originally started with... it was Hal Puthoff, Russell Targ, and on the military side, it was Skip Atwater that actually got this program started. And it was actually first designed as a counterintelligence program to see whether or not there was anything to it and were our secret assets at risk. And so it turned out that, yes, it was. And so they decided that they were going to start a program to see if we could in turn use it against the Soviets. And so Project Stargate, which is the code name under which most people are familiar with the program, started. And it lasted about 25 years. And very successful, by the way.
Wow. Yeah, I thought Ingo Swann was one of the original ones.
He was. He was the first psychic that was brought on board, along with Pat Price and then later Hella Hammond.
Wow, because, yeah, the whole thing is with remote viewing, I mean, they put a nice little on it because it's a scientific, technique that they're using, but basically it's, you're using your consciousness, you're exploring your consciousness, and it's like being a psychic warrior. It's a weaponized consciousness, and basically you guys are traveling the astral realms, and the same things apply to you as any psychic, and if somebody is not ready for the weird stuff that they're going to see, and they're not a grounded person, I really feel that like some kind of lower astral entities can get attached to them, and they can even lose their mind, become schizophrenic. They can't handle it. And have you been a witness to some of that? Like somebody that isn't a grounded person and they just can't handle basically.
It's actually part of the theme of the book that I wrote. My autobiography, A Sorcerer's Apprentice, and that was the fact.
And do they make you, and it's a two-part question, and do they make you, like, sign some kind of agreement that if something happens to you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a human use agreement. That's what it's called. Yes, actually, most of the instructors out there that teach remote viewing usually have people sign a form like that, simply because...
And what is it? Does it say, like, what could possibly happen to you?
I mean, basically, it depends upon what area of remote viewing you're dealing with. Most instructors teach CRV, which is controlled remote viewing, also known as coordinate remote viewing. And in this form, there is actually very little danger in using this type of form. The biggest difficulty in using this is the fact that it challenges your belief systems. Okay? Now, there is another form of remote viewing that is used called extended remote viewing, or ERV. And this tends to be a little bit deeper in effect, and that's because that it's usually done in a very deep hypnagogic state. And like you say, in this particular state, part of the theory of remote viewing is that there are other entities out there in the matrix of all creation, what we call the psychospaces involved. And so, yeah, if you're not grounded, it it can definitely have an effect on you. I know that personally, you know, it was very difficult for me to, how can I put it, to integrate this new ability into my life. It was, I mean, it just blew away all the signposts that I had, all the points, if you will, of my belief system. And it definitely caused some problems, which I relate in the book. You know, when I walked into Dave Morehouse's class for the first time at UCLA in 1999, it was a class of 15 people, and of the 15, I was the only skeptic.
And wow. So
when
and you became his apprentice.
I told them when he had each one of us stand up and give a short blurb on who we were and why we wanted to take the class, you know, I was quite honest and I said, you know, frankly, I'm a skeptic of all this, but I do have an open mind and I wanted to come and find out whether or not I would be able to do something like this. And so, you know, coming from a background of law enforcement and science and mathematics, going into such an esoteric area where, you know, it's kind of like the Twilight Zone where there are no signposts. Was a very interesting experience, and most of those experiences are related in the book. It was not an easy transition.
Well, you know, are you still there?
Yeah, still here.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost you for a second. Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because even the Aboriginals, you know, they think of the spiritual realm. The internal, when your eyes are closed, they think of that as the alpha, the real, you know.
Right.
And when the external is when your eyes are open, and that's the beta. So they knew of this thousands of years ago, you know, and they even talked about being lucid in their awake state.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the ability seems to be innate, and it's probably a result of evolutionary forces that, you know, it became a survival mechanism for early man to help him survive the cold and the dark and all the creatures of the night out there.
Yeah, I've basically been remote viewing kind of my whole life in a way without putting the name on it, you know, and it's interesting when you describe it because, see, I was born basically from a family where psychic abilities is just a normal way of life. And, like, I was brought up that way. So,
yeah,
like,
that's really strange because for me, I was brought up by two teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was very surprising was to find out when I was told my parents what I had been doing and was writing a book about it, was that my mother, who is Irish and German, told me that she had had psychic experiences when she was a child, and she never spoke about it. And I was totally flabbergasted that my mom, who was a teacher for years, would admit to the fact that, you know, the things that I was getting involved in was something that she was already familiar with.
Yeah. Now, for some of the people that just came into the chat room, I see a lot of people just came. We're with John Herlowski, and his website is sorcerersapprentice.com. And he's from law enforcement background. He was a skeptic. He became a remote viewer. And we talked of Ingo Swann and how he was from the Stanford Research Institute, and David Morehouse, how he trained John. And basically... So, John, we also mentioned how, you know, people can pick up these lower astral entities from being not grounded and, you know, coming into the... Is this something... Have you met any of these negative entities or encountered anything like that while you were remote viewing?
Well, they were always talked about as in matter-of-fact terms by their military remote viewers themselves. I mean, it was just an accepted part of what you experienced out there in the ether. You know, they didn't put much into it because you have to understand that these men and women were involved in operational work. They were not involved in research work per se. They were doing operational work. And so when you are given the tasking and you jump into the ether, I mean, you are going to a particular target and you are supposed to bring back information. So if you're concentrating on that particular aspect, the probability that you're going to meet other entities out there is probably pretty small. I know that in the entire time, the 17 years that I've been involved in this, I only met one of these entities once, and it was only, if you will, in passing. And that was on my way to a target. This goblin-like face suddenly appeared before me and zipped on by as I went past him to the target.
Yes.
And, you know, the only reason that there was no exchange there was because as a remote viewer, as an operational remote viewer, you are concentrating on bringing back information. You are concentrating on the mission. And yeah. We are taught from the very beginning to concentrate on the mission and put aside these other entities out there because, you know, they're not germane to your mission.
It's mind-boggling to me because it's that the, you know, the CIA and the government and everybody is using this weaponized, you know, consciousness, and a couple hundred years ago they were burning people at the stake for this. Even ancestors of mine, you know, ancestors of mine got burned at the stake for being psychic and for being healers and exploring their consciousness, and the government's using it to explore consciousness. It's a target. Yeah, now, I mean, you know,
it's enjoyed a checkered history throughout time. I mean, there are places and there are times where it was looked upon as something wonderful, like for instance the Oracle at Delphi. But then again, as you state, you know, in certain other times, it was looked upon with horror as something abjectly evil. And as you said, you know, they burned people at the stake for this.
Yeah, and even the Oracle, that might have been some kind of technology. I mean, she had that Umphalos stone egg or whatever underneath her or something, and there was more to that story. There was some kind of gaseous fumes that used to come up out of there too. You know,
throughout time, different psychics have used different methods to try and get down into that trance-like state that we call a hypnagogic state. You know, it was the gas that seeped out of the ground, you know. For others, mushrooms or certain plants. And for others, it was simply meditation and breathing exercises, which is what.
Yeah, I think too. When you tend to use like a hallucinogenic, like mushrooms or LSD or ayahuasca or DMT, because it's been a good 10 years now, but I did ayahuasca in 2004, been 12 years, and I really feel like that you're getting no higher than like the lower astral when you deal with when you're hallucinogenics, like, because it's something drug induced, you know. I don't think it's exactly true.
Exactly. And you know, the idea is that you want to enter this realm with as clear a mind as possible.
Exactly. Yes.
So, and especially if you're doing operational work, you know, it's impossible to bring back reliable information if you're hallucinating. So
we had a question in the chat room as well. One question was that they wanted to know if anybody has studied these astral entities that are in there that you know of.
Well, you have to understand that from a scientific point of view, this is simply anecdotal data. There's no way to prove that these entities actually exist. This is all anecdotal data that I'm giving you. It was experiential, if you will. The remote viewers themselves, sure, they saw it. They knew that they were there. As I said, I've seen it once. We knew that they were there. But it's not something that, for want of a better statement, is the fact that, you know, we weren't interested. You know, we were involved in operational work. And so if you're trying to look at a power plant, you know, 7,000 miles away, the idea that you might have some other discarnate entity out there is just, you know, not, and it's incidental. It's not something that you can get involved in.
We got one more question because we got 5 minutes till break. So I'll get one more question in from the chat room before break. Any other questions we'll do after break. This question was from PSI in the chat room, John. Have you ever tried to manipulate an object at the location of the remote viewing? Hold on. Have you ever tried to manipulate an object at the location of the remote viewing target?
No. Remote viewing, by and large, is primarily a passive form of intelligence gathering. However, there is known as remote influencing, and then there is a whole spectrum.
Like you can bend shapes. And
one end where you're just influencing an individual's unconscious thoughts, all the way over to actually transmitting energy to heal somebody.
Wow. I wonder if anybody has ever tried to remote view where the Rh negative gene came from.
I don't know. It might be an interesting project. The only thing is that you have to understand that remote viewing is psychic ability subject to the scientific method. And if you don't do this thing we call remote viewing under the protocol of remote viewing, then it's not remote viewing. It's just psychic ability. I mean, all remote viewers are psychics, but not all psychics are remote viewers. You have to be trained to be a remote viewer.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, I forgot my train of thought.
Well, I'll pick it up. So basically, after break, we got 3 minutes till break. After break, you know, I want to get into, you know, other worlds, maybe Mars, and I even have some Ingo Swann questions if you about when he viewed the moon as well. And
I was fortunate enough to take some lectures from Ingo and to talk with him personally.
Oh, cool.
Past, so it was definitely a highlight in my remote viewing career.
You know what? You know what? Too, what sometimes I find with sometimes, and I'm not saying this is you at all, because you know you're being very honest with everything you're saying. But I find a lot of times when you guys have somebody from the military, and they start to explore their consciousness from a military weaponized point of mind, and they say they're spiritual, but when, you know, stuff really starts getting weird and they still are very ego-based minded and they really worry about what other people think and how they're judged and they're not too grounded, you know, as they thought they were, I think the certain society standards, they're afraid to be called a fool or made a mockery of, and, you know, they and that's what's, you know, holding them back, because I think that's what...
With the military people, you have to understand that the men and women who were involved in the Stargate Project were looked upon as outcasts virtually by the regular military and regular intelligence people. They risked a lot professionally, and there are a number of people who were involved in the program that suffered professionally because they were involved with it.
I can imagine.
You have to continually remember that the military and the intelligence services are a very insular society, and they tend to be very what's the word I want? Conservative.
Structured, yeah. Yeah, conservative too.
The men and women who are involved in this program put a lot out on the line to be able to do this work for the benefit of the United States. And many of them suffered for it. So it's, to say that these men were, were not fully grounded and stuff like that, it is just missing the point completely.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I meant grounded, like they thought they were coming from a spiritual way, like saying, oh, you know, maybe I'm not too religious, but I'm spiritual, or maybe that I think they really have to be completely open to experiencing the whole realm of everything for it to...
Well, they are, surprisingly enough. When you've talked to these men, like Dave Morehouse and Paul Smith and Lynn Buchanan and Skip Atwater... Ingo Swann and the other men and women who are involved in this program, you find that, by and large, all of them have a certain amount of spirituality in them that you find not only refreshing but a little unusual in somebody that wore a uniform.
I guess that's why they were chosen, right? We gotta go to a break real quick, John. We'll pick that up right when we get back. And I want to thank everybody for joining us in the chat room and live. And song coming up is called Movie Star Fix. And you can find Analog Driver at Reverb Nation. Spiral out.
Thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And we're back. My name is Ra from themysticalspiral.com, TMS. And we are with an expert remote viewer. Mr. John Herlovsky at asorcerersapprentice.com. And everybody, he's got a book at this by the same name, A Sorcerer's Apprentice. And we had left off with John. And yeah, now I wasn't trying to get you the wrong idea of what I was said by not being grounded. It was just that I think a lot of, you know, a lot of people, even, you know, they you're right, they've been ridiculed and they suffered a lot by doing this program. You know, they were shunned by a lot of people. And, you know, I think it's a shame because they can't even talk about the real experiences they have, because if you even mentioned like off-world types, or, you know, even the word alien, like we were mentioning before, right before the show when we were talking, just mentioning the word alien, people roll their eyes and they think they immediately dismiss you like you're a wacko.
Yeah.
And but it's not fair, because they're talking, you know, about astral entities, and basically that's what they are. They're beings from other worlds, you know. So that right there is showing you that you're encountering the same beings that people, it's taboo to talk about, but it's being used in the government right in front of their eyes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in this life that we have right now, in this day and age, you have so many people that are so caught up in what Dave Morehouse used to call the unconsciousness of consciousness.
Yeah.
So wound up around the axle with their own lives, you know, that you wind up seeing people falling off curves because they're looking at their smartphone.
Yeah. It is like, it's like looking into their little black mirror of it's like a scrying in the black mirror, like John Dee.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you start talking about realms other than the concrete, that's anathema to a lot of people, especially those who have perhaps fundamentalist religious views. So I would commend both you and Sarge and your audience for, you know, taking a little bit of a chance and going out and looking at a larger universe.
Yeah, that's the whole point of my show, is to try to awaken. I really feel, John, that our true abilities are laying dormant in our DNA somewhere. And throughout our life, it's up to us to activate it through certain, you know, symbols and techniques and different ancient symbols and different ancient meditation techniques and different things that you encounter throughout your life. Even certain songs that I have wrote, like things just awakened in my body, you know, just from playing music. And you being a martial artist, you know, that's why you come from a skeptic point of view, but also you being a martial artist, you have to be some sort of spiritual person to be a martial artist for half your life. I mean, you have to embody the whole mind, body, and spirit of a warrior just to have the instinct and the intuition for martial arts. It's almost spiritual.
And I think that's part of the reason why I was so open to at least the idea that something like remote viewing could be possible. I think that if I hadn't had that background, that my response to it might have been entirely different.
So it's like being psychic, but it's more focused on a target with a specific agenda, you know, so you're not just, yeah, so it is totally different than just being a regular psychic. It's like a job, you know.
Yeah, it's goal-oriented, which is what you would expect from the military and intelligence services. You know, it's goal-oriented. It was designed to bring information back, you know, regarding persons, places, objects, or events, distance, space, and time outside the normal five modes of perception. It was designed specifically as an intelligence asset. Okay, it wasn't designed to do, you know, palm reading or something like that.
Well, that's interesting, because that you said the five senses, and basically that's a good question I have for you, because do you feel, I know it's a touchy subject, and you know, I got to tap dance around it a little bit, but do you feel that maybe some black ops, covert, underground section of the military, or some elites or people, you know, that are running the show, do you think that they're purposely putting a veil over society's consciousness in a way, dumbing them down, making them only limited to their five senses so they don't explore their consciousness? almost trapping us on some material plane grid.
You're leaving the realm of remote viewing and moving off into a different area. My own personal view is, in a way, I mean, when you think that all of the media that we use for our information is controlled by basically five corporations, these corporations are owned by people who have a specific, political agenda, then, I could understand where you're coming from on something like that, sure. But that's outside the realm of remote viewing. Remote viewing is a very passive.
It wasn't a remote viewing question. It was just, your personal opinion. You think it's like something they're purposely doing.
I think there's no question about it. And I think that the behavior of the media during this past election proves your assertion.
Yeah, it's programming. It's some kind of, John, I think in some way, just about 100% of society is programmed in some type of way, even through the TV or whatever it is. It's some kind of programming we all have.
Yeah, I mean, it's very insidious. And one of the things that Dave Morehouse told me, in fact, he told our classes always, is to don't follow what everybody else says or does. Find your own truth. It's kind of like the old saying from the X-Files, the truth is out there, but you need to do your own research. You need to find out the truth. Okay? Don't take it at face value what the government says. Because when you have people up there that lie for a living, how can you trust that?
I know. It's serious. And it's like no matter who you elect, it's the same machine. So I have I really wanted to ask you about, past lives as well. Sure. If this is something that you guys are remote viewing, or if that's something that you're familiar with working with, and is it basically like, because I feel, and from what my beliefs and how I was raised, is that basically, John, we have countless lives in the past, present, and future going on all simultaneously.
Well, you say that, Rob, because that was a question that was posed to the remote viewers back during the time that the military was trying to push the limits of what remote viewers could do. And one of the questions they were asked, without being told, of course, since remote viewing is always done in the blind, you never know what your target is. They were asked if reincarnation was real, if past lives were real.
Yeah, and that's one of the first things I would have asked.
Sure, yeah, well, they did. And what the viewers who were targeted on this particular question came back with was, it was like looking into a mirror reflected in another mirror. I mean, as far back as they looked,
whoa,
the lives kept on going.
Whoa, like mirrors lined up looking at, oh man.
Fast as they looked. And it was the same thing into the future. There was no resolution to the lives that you lived. So whatever destiny that we are going on to was hidden from them. It was not information that they could ever ascertain. But it wasn't just into the past and into the future, because that is a linear space-time frame. They found that wherever they looked, to the side, to the left, to the right, up and down, the same thing occurred. And the way they interpreted that was that we live countless lives, not only into the past and into the future, but concurrently now we live other lives. You're living lives in some other realm as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I believe that. Right in the present now we have, there's a version of us that didn't get on the show tonight, and there's a version of
all aspects of your soul that are out there, and you learn from all of these different aspects as well. But it's all like unconscious. It's all in the realm of the matrix of all creation.
So is it even possible to remote view the future? Because, John, like,
do it. I do that as a living.
But is it in all honesty though, like I feel like you know, I could change my mind. People decide not to do things. Timelines change. They get altered. People change their minds. How can it, you know, that's the one thing I feel that we have, is that the future is not set in stone. You know, we can always change things.
Well, it is, and it isn't. It's kind of like quantum physics.
Yeah.
Where actual physical locations are indeterminate until they're observed. And a particle has complementary aspects to it. Hmm. And so it's the same way that reality is as well. Part of the work that I do right now, which actually forms how I make a living, is I give predictions on the financial markets.
Wow.
And I work with my partner, Marty Rosenblatt, in a company called Physics Intuitions Applications. And we are using what we call precogs, which is, and I give the nod to the movie Minority Report for that. We train remote viewers to become precogs in order to look ahead into the future to see what a particular financial, like let's say the Forex market or the options market or the S&P 500, what they will be doing in the future. And then you put positions into the market on that in order to make money.
That's amazing. And you teach classes, right, and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, we do.
People could find that on your website.
Yeah, right now my personal stats are I have a 75% hit rate.
Wow.
And that's 25 points above what is considered a random result. So you can see this is over right now over 70 trials.
Well, yeah, I have a buddy Masaki that does that as well. Now you said that remote viewed Mars before.
Yes.
You know, have you encountered any caves or any artifacts or mummies or even the nuclear explosion? You know, I have a lot of questions.
actually, the Mars mission, you know, it's funny because when I was a kid, I wanted to be the first man to land on Mars.
Wow.
And the second target that I was given in...
Maybe you were in another life. Maybe that was you thinking, you know, remembering something.
Really? The second target that we were given was the Mars Sojourner rover on the Twin Peaks area of Mars. And I was there. And, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, as a remote viewer, you work in the blind. You don't know what your target is.
So you were the alien.
Yeah. In this case, I guess I was.
Yeah.
A different world.
Yeah.
So the only thing that Dave told us, besides the coordinates for the target, was the fact that he said that this was going to be a very interesting target. That's all he said to us. So when I dropped into the target area and I'm looking around, all I'm seeing is this huge rock field. Wow. You know, this flat, level area that went off into the hills, these low hills out on the horizon, and there were nothing but all these rocks strewn all over the place. And I'm thinking,
are you smelling everything and feeling the atmosphere and experiencing?
Oh yeah, I was undergoing what is called a bilocation, and
wow,
that's where your experience becomes so strong that it's as if you were actually at the target site.
Yeah, I've had dreams like that.
Just as real as if you were sitting there or standing there. It's very, very vivid. And I was there, and the funny thing is that, like you said, you know, do you breathe, or do you smell or taste?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course you do. And the funny thing is that your body responds to it in a bilocation. And because of the fact that Mars has an atmosphere only 1/100th of that here on Earth,
yeah,
there's nothing there really to breathe. And so when I was there in my spiritual form, if you will, or my extension of consciousness, I was having a hard time breathing, simply because it was this connection with this almost airless world that was seeping into my consciousness. And so I was having a very hard time breathing. It felt like there was no air to breathe. And it was very cold there. You know, I was snug down in a sleeping bag, and I was nice and comfortable and warm in it until I dropped into the target, and then I was freezing cold. Why? Because it's cold on Mars. And that information gets brought in, and your body reacts to it somatically. So, you know, I looked around, I saw a meteor flash through the sky, and I realized that when I looked on the horizon, the sky was this salmon color. But when I looked up at the zenith, the sky was black, except for a few small, very thin clouds overhead. And I was thinking to myself, this is really weird. I mean, Dave said this was supposed to be a fun place, and this place is as boring as Death Valley.
Yeah.
You know? And all of a sudden, I hear this whirring sound, very high-pitched, and this dust devil goes zipping on by. And the interesting thing about the dust devil was that it looked like there were electronic, like, fireflies sparkling on the interior that were swirling up into the vortex. And I was looking at this, and I was just completely lost. You know, I was starting to get angry, thinking that, you know, maybe I had missed the target. So I turned around to see what was behind me, and almost supposedly stepped on an object, which was about 2 feet long, rectangular, and it had this blue, reddish-blue glass on the top, and it had, like, wires on the interior inside the glass.
Like something manufactured?
Yeah, it was manufactured.
Oh.
And I was thinking, you know, it kind of looks like some sort of electronic panel or a solar cell. Oh, and I stepped back to look at it, to focus in on it. And the guy who was next to me on the floor in our sleeping bags, he started to snore. And when he did, he broke into my hypnagogic state and yanked me all the way back to the room. So the feeling is kind of like being on the end of a stretched out rubber band that somebody lets go of one of the ends. You get snapped back. And,
yeah, I know the feeling.
You know, it kind of hurt my stomach. Well, of course, when we get the feedback, we find out that the target was the Mars Sojourner rover on Mars.
Whoa.
And the really fascinating thing was those sparkling motes that I saw swirling up in the dust devil. That was not known at the time. Dust devils were just then starting to be observed on Mars.
Wow.
And it wasn't until more than a year and a half later that experiments done by the University of Arizona under the auspices of NASA were undertaken to see whether or not these dust devils might pose a threat to astronauts on Mars. And it turns out that they found that these dust devils here on Earth were very highly charged because of the fact that the friction between the heavier particles, which stay down low, and the lighter particles, which get drawn up into the vortex, causes a huge charge to build up in the dust devil, upwards of 5,000 volts per square meter.
Wow.
And it can cause disruption of communications. It can cause the dust to stick to the suit and all sorts of different things. And that's what I saw, the electrical charges flowing up into the vortex. And this information was not known at that time.
It's amazing.
And so here's an instance where bringing back information from over 40 million miles turned out to be absolutely correct, a year and a half ahead of before it was discovered here on Earth. And then the dust devils on Mars are 3 times the size of the ones here. They jump all the way up 8 to 10 kilometers into the atmosphere. They're huge.
Yeah. Wow.
So that was my Mars experience. I'm sorry I didn't see any aliens.
No, but that's monumental, man. Jeez,
what that solar cell was the solar cell on top of the Sojourner rover itself.
Yeah, that's amazing. What do we have? What time is it? We got 5 minutes. I had some questions too about when you met Ingo Swann and some of your opinions about that. I mean, I had read about him several years ago, about him by the government had asked him to view the dark side of the moon, and he had saw buildings and roads and humanoids digging and all types of stuff, I remember he said. And I remember he also, you know, kind of said what I had said before and said, you know, basically the government is very intimidated by ETs or whatever races are out there in these other worlds, and they're even afraid to even admit to them. Is that anything he talked about?
No. My experience with Ingo was strictly on operational matters. We talked a lot about, you know, how we see and experience things in the Matrix. I asked him some questions about, you know, I wanted to try and relate what I experienced versus what he experienced, and it turns out it's virtually the same type of thing. I mean, he knew all of my experience, and he kind of laughed because he said that, you know, we don't see differently, John. You know, it's just how we experience it that's different. But
yeah,
you know, I see just the way that you do there. Yeah, I mean, this is the real thing. And, you know, we talked about some spiritual matters, and, you know, I related to him some of my experiences, and he talked about some of his experiences. But, you know, I'm, like I said, a skeptic, and my position is that although there's a lot of anecdotal evidence out there on the fact that ETs have visited and UFOs and things like that, there is no smoking gun. And so as a scientist, I can only look upon these experiences as being experiential. So yeah. I don't believe, you know, and especially if you are a mathematician like myself and understand the difficulty and the distances and the energies involved in a vehicle moving between stars, especially when you consider that, you know, there are in the neighborhood of 500 billion stars in our galaxy, you know, the finding one small blue world in that huge expanse, a needle in the haystack would be easy in comparison. And not only that, you have to understand that civilizations don't exist just in space. They also exist in time.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think it's coming interdimensionally, though. I don't really think it's coming, per se, from the stars traveling here millions and millions and trillions of miles. And I think it's more, you know, they're leaving space and time and traveling through portals, yeah, interdimensionally. That's how we're being visited.
It could very well be that, you know, they have technologies that are beyond ours. They would have to be. But what would the probability be that they would exist at a particular time and place that would also be coexistent with us?
Well, I think also
Remember that, you know, this planet has been around for 4.5 billion years. And, you know, okay, and in that span of time, the time that humans, even ancient humans, have been on this world is just a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent.
Okay? I understand. Yeah, I agree. So I think we're some kind of experimental planet, though.
That you're going to have two civilizations contiguous in both space and time is really, really small. Yeah. Really small.
No, I'm right with you on that, but I think it's we're some kind of experimental planet, and, you know, it's kind of being
I can neither confirm nor deny your supposition.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody, we're with the expert John on Herlovsky. He's an expert on remote viewing. He's ex-law enforcement. He's got a book out called A Sorcerer's Apprentice. pick it up. You can find everything about him in the classes he teach at asorceressprentice.com. And like always, you can find me at themysticalspiral.com. Enjoy the beautiful crescent moon out there. My new YouTube page is Exploring the Ka with your host, Ra Castaldo. And it's been a great night. I appreciate everybody in the chat room, and I appreciate you listening each week. I hope you enjoyed our thought-provoking program. And once again, you can find John at asorceressapprentice.com. Spiral out.